across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for the steady flow of emails. Some of them I've replied to personally, and the rest I will do in some shout-outs on a future edition of this show. I want to get cracking with things, but before I talk to the guest this time and introduce a new topic, I think, to you, I just have a couple of things to say. One of them, in fact, is to do with an email I got. This came from a guy calling himself Lars. Now, I wasn't able to reply to his email because it came from an anonymous email remailer, but he made this point. First of all, he said that he liked the show, and then he said, "For as long as I've been listening, you've often promised that there were big developments coming and the show would improve, and yet it stayed exactly the same." Well, Lars, yes and no. Progress has been slow because this is an independently funded, very small show. We don't have the resources that big media can put into it. But what we do have is commitment to it, which very frequently they lack. And let's think about this. Has the show improved? Well, I think technically the show has improved. The shows are a little bit longer. There are more of them than there used to be, and the guests are better. So in those terms, and I'm speaking only generally here, you know, not all the guests are going to absolutely float your boat, but a lot of them have been really good, especially in the last year or so, I think, humbly. So I think the shows have been improving. Now, I may, and I have to say this in big neon lights, have some very big news about this show coming soon. Nothing that I can talk about right now, and, you know, who knows, it may not happen, but I would be delighted if it did. That is all I can say for now. So, Lars, please watch this space. And we'll see where we go. Thank you very much for all of your emails. Keep them coming. TheUnexplained.tv is my website. You can click and follow on the link there to send the email, a comment about the show. I love getting your guest suggestions because a lot of these people we book and put on the show. And if you'd like to make a donation, there is also a PayPal link there for you to make a PayPal donation. Now, to the guest this time. Not often in these years of doing The Unexplained that I've booked somebody that I don't know a huge amount about, and I've taken a leap of faith and a walk on the wild side. Sometimes I've done that and it's worked spectacularly well, and on occasions I've done that and maybe it hasn't. This time is one of those occasions where I'm going to take a chance, and purely on the basis of a news release that I received. And this is about a book called The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anybody Can Contact the Other Side, a book by Candace L. Talmadge and Jaina L. Simons. I'll read from the news release because it's a really good news release. Now, I've done journalism for years, and let me tell you, on a news desk, you get loads of news releases through, and the first two lines will determine whether you go any further with that story. And this is a good news release that made me want to do more about this. So these two authors explain how a healing circle, rather than a traditional seance, can be a safe and, quote, powerful container for uniting with those who've passed away, or even with yet unborn children, based on their decades of experience, experimentation, and study. And as co-founders of the Sattva Institute, the authors relate step by step how to joyfully connect with deceased loved ones and with future offspring. Two remarkable things, if that is so. And those lines alone made me want to book them for this show and put them on here. So you and I are going to take a journey. Or as Art Bell used to say, want to take a ride? That's what we're going to do this time. Anything can happen. We'll connect with Candace L. Talmadge, C.L. Talmadge, as she's known in the books, very soon here on The Unexplained. Thank you very much for all of your support. If you have given a donation recently, you know who you are. Thank you so much. You know that every penny, every cent, I nearly said every centime, but of course the French use euros now, don't they? And look what trouble the eurozone is in. But you know what I'm saying, every individual contribution makes a difference to what we do here, because this is not a big money show. We are not big media. We're better than that, I hope. You can make the judgment about that. Thank you very much to a very important person, Adam Cornwell, who's been working overtime on the show recently, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Thanks, Adam, for everything that you've done. As I say, watch this space for developments. Let's cross to the US now, get to Candace L. Talmadge, and talk about this book and the theories in it, The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anybody Can Contact the Other Side. Well, any of us who've lost important people in our lives. And if you've been a listener to this show, you'll know that I lost both my mother and father in recent years. And it's a devastating blow that you never recover from. Never, ever. And there isn't a day when I don't think about them and what they did for me in my life. And I miss them. So in a way, I had to do this interview, if only for that reason. So Candace L. Talmadge in the States, thank you very much for coming on The Unexplained.
Well, thank you for having me as a guest.
And look, at the beginning of this, I said Candace is in the U.S., having forgotten exactly where you were. Where are you?
Based just south of Dallas, Texas.
Okay, and how's the weather in Dallas? Because I know it's either snowing there in the winter or it's parchingly hot, if that's the right way of putting it, in the summertime. What have you got now?
Gloomy and hot.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm sure it has its compensations.
I've been here for 34 years and I'm still waiting to find them, but that's okay. I'm an optimist. They'll be there one of these days.
Okay, you're 34 years, you're obviously going to stay. Tell me a little bit about you, because the description of you that I've got is only skeletal, so it's better that you tell your story.
Well, my story is that I am a professional writer. I was a journalist for many years and a business journalist. And I had some emotional and personal issues that compelled me to look in directions that are not typical. I always grew up knowing that whatever the contemporary wisdom was or settled wisdom, I didn't believe it. I thought there had to be a different explanation, something else. Something that may not be explained now, but that might be explained later, or might be amenable to a personal explanation that works for the individual. Because that's my approach, is I don't believe in a universal truth. I believe in personal truth. And whatever resonates with you, and as you grow and evolve, your personal truth will change. And that's certainly what's happened to me, because I certainly didn't, I was open to the concept, but I didn't think that I had the ability to speak to anybody who didn't have a physical body, whether so-called dead or not yet born. And as it turns out, I can do that, and anybody else can too. And that's one of the reasons I wrote The Afterlife Healing Circle, or co-authored it, yes.
Fact of the matter is that an awful lot of trash is written about the afterlife, and many people write vanity published books, don't they, about these things that really don't say anything or just regurgitate other people's experiences. But you're saying here that you've had these experiences yourself. You've been able to practice what you preach.
Absolutely. I couldn't write it if I didn't already practice it. What my co-author, Jana Simons, and I describe in the Afterlife Healing Circle are actual healing circles that we have conducted for clients and students over a period of more than 25 years. And the stories, they're real people. They had wonderful experiences and some not so wonderful. Honestly, this approach doesn't work for everybody. But then the best-selling author, the psychomantium that Dr. Moody describes, doesn't work for everybody. There's no one way that will help everybody.
When you talk about a healing circle, sorry to interrupt, Candace.
That's all right.
I don't want that point to pass me by. But when you talk about a healing circle, I have an idea of what that is because I've spoken to other people about these things. But what's your thoughts? What is your conception of that?
Well, my conception of a healing circle arises out of the talking circles of the natives, the justice circles of the native peoples of Canada, but it adds a dimension that is not normally found in these traditional circles. We invite those whom the natives might call the ancestors or the descendants. All right, we invite souls who are not in physical body into our circles for the purpose of healing resolution, but we derive the circle and we conceive of it directly out of those circles among indigenous and native peoples. That's the context for it. I mean, people talk about the seance, and yes, you can say, well, this is just a seance. Yes and no, because as I've seen it practiced, and as I've seen it depicted, I regard the seance as a debased and bastardized version of something that is a powerful, sacred healing tool.
Well, I've spoken to a lot of people who've claimed to do them, and I've been involved in something that equated to a seance just the once in my life. I've never entirely understood what they are, and I think most of the people I've spoken to about them tend to have a different definition. What happened to me was that I was with a bunch of people who were into all of this sort of stuff, like-minded people with one intention. And I do know that something, although I don't know what it was, happened as an interaction between us as a group of people and something else somewhere, but I've never entirely understood it. That's what happened with me.
And what concerns me about the seance as it's generally practiced and the stereotype is that there is something out there, all right? Just like there is something in the world, all right? And I would ask people to think, would you go and just throw open your door and say, come on in to anybody walking down the street? No. Nor would you find it particularly prudent to take a stroll at 3 o'clock in the morning in something like New York City Central Park, because there are a lot of good people and there are a lot of people on earth with not so good intentions, and the same holds for the other side. Now, there's this conception that once we die, we become somehow perfect, all-knowing, all-wise, and this is not the case. Who we were in a physical body, we remain even though we no longer have a physical body. We don't become perfected or all-knowing, all-loving, and enlightened. We just move into a different dimension, if you will, or a different frequency that we in the physical body cannot perceive.
So you're saying, Candace, that we stay essentially what we were. We just move somewhere else.
We just move somewhere else.
It's a little bit like moving house.
Imagine London in the 1850s, and you have two sisters, and one of them goes with her husband to the New World. She moves to, say, and goes to Oregon or California. And there is not a real easy way back then to communicate between London and, say, San Francisco, California. Letters, but they took months, often years, to get there. That's somewhat analogous to what happens when a beloved person, the physical body dies, but the soul remains intact, the consciousness, the awareness of self remain intact, but they are no longer immediately accessible to the five physical senses. That's what happens.
Here's a big question. How do you know this?
How do I know this? Well, I know it from my own personal experience of contacting the so-called dead and the not yet born. I can't prove it to you, but then no one could have proved it to me. I wanted to have the experience for myself, and that's what the Afterlife Healing Circle gives you. It gives you an experience. We have written it to make that experience pleasant and fruitful, but we also say right up front in the book that not everybody's going to succeed at this. It's not for everyone.
Presumably what you get when you do these things, you get one person who's very keen to contact a relative, loved one, somebody who's died. But this is a group effort. How
yes,
do you
is.
Select the other people involved in a group effort?
Well, what we talk about is that there are also people who really want to do this because they're interested in it. It resonates. It speaks to them. And you have a conductor, and the person who wants to contact the soul on the other side is what we call the inquirer. All right. And the conductor invites a group of people, no more than eight. Maybe the inquirer wants to bring a friend or a relative with him or her, and that's fine. And then you contact about three or four other people, and you do not allow the inquirer, because usually they want to blab everything about that person, and you say, no, do not tell me squat, except I want to make sure that you have an emotional connection to this person, and that what you want to get out of the healing circle is just the chance for resolution and to say goodbye and anything else you didn't get the chance to say before that person crossed over. And then the Enquirer, the conductor, sort of brings people together and explains, as outlined in the book, how to do this, and the circle begins. And then souls usually understand when they come into the circle that the Enquirer, the person who wants to make contact, needs some sort of evidential material, all right? So the soul will start giving names or incidents, or will describe how the soul died, you know, that kind of information. That's what the other people do. They voice that information. They can't just sit there and go, oh, this energy feels so great, la-di-da. They're there for a purpose. And as they voice this information, they get more information. It's a self-reinforcing cycle. Once someone starts to speak and another person starts to speak, the information starts to flow. And at some point, the Enquirer will say, yes, I'm sure that this is Uncle John, okay? I know that now. And then the Enquirer can speak to the soul, and the other people can help the Enquirer get what the soul is trying to say, because that group energy magnifies that flow of non-physical information. And that's how you speak to souls on the other side. You use your four non-physical senses. I call them the soul senses. Other people call them intuition or instinct. Some people refer to them as psychic senses. It doesn't matter. It's just that these are the intuitive senses that you also have as a soul, and they exist whether or not you have a physical body.
And as a group of people, you're saying that the group acts almost as, if you want to get a better television picture, if you're in one of these weak signal areas, you would buy a longer aerial with more elements in it to try and amplify the signal. Similarly, it sounds like if you've got this circle of people, they are amplifying the contact.
They're absolutely true. And what does it is that, again, I talked about the emotional connection between the person who wants to make contact and the soul. The people in the group, including the Enquirer and the conductor and all the people who volunteered to come and join, they also send love into the circle. And that's the one skill you have to have. If you can send love, you can participate. Mm. All right?
So you've got to come into it with, what do they call it, a pure intent. But how then can you scientifically analyze what you do? Because somebody who comes into the circle who is motivated by a desire to know and is skeptical about what you do, they're not necessarily going to have that love in their heart, are they, that you talked about?
Well, I don't know that I'm fine with skepticism. What I don't want is denial. Okay, none of this is valid, none of blah, blah, blah. That I don't is not helpful. But if you say, you know, I've never done this before and I'm not really sure it can happen, but you know, I'll take an open mind. That's fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. In fact, some of the best information comes through people who've never done it before because they have no expectation. They're just there to experience what happens. And you can't scientifically analyze anything about the healing circle because it is not designed to prove anything or to provide evidence of anything. There's a difference. People think, oh, I have to prove it. Well, I'm the person who says, I can't prove it, and I don't care to prove it. That's not what I'm trying to do with the afterlife healing circle. There's a big difference. The mind, the mental body, wants proof, wants evidence, wants rationales, and the heart doesn't give a hoot, all right? It doesn't care. The heart and soul want to feel connection. They want to feel love. And they want to say goodbye, I love you, or any something else that they have unresolved business. That's the resolution. And that's what the afterlife healing circle is for. It is for emotional and spiritual resolution. It is not to prove anything, because you really can't.
And that is the greatest thing, isn't it? The greatest gulf between over here, if you believe there is a this side of life and a that side of life. Over here on this side of life, look, I've got it in my own life, really. There's, no matter how close you were, for example, to your parents, and I was very close to mine, you have a situation where there are things that you wish you'd said and didn't say. And it sounds to me like your circles are for exactly that situation, where people need to resolve, they need to normalize things.
One of the things that causes the most anguish about death is the not knowing if that person is okay, or having something left unsaid. That is what the Healing Circle is designed to help people with, just to give them that sense of, yes, my dad's okay, he's in another space now, but he's fine, and he's moving on, and he's building a brand new space and life in a different dimension. That is what people need to know. And they need to know that the souls they love are not lost to them forever and gone and obliterated. Okay. That is, that not knowing is probably the worst. But then it's similar to, say, a child is abducted and you never learn the child's fate. That is the same kind of not knowing that is so causes so much anguish and heartbreak. And the healing, the Afterlife Healing Circle is designed to help alleviate that. And is also designed to do another thing, which people don't realize they can do. Most people, when they find out they're going to become parents, the first thing they go is, egads, I've got the jitters, I'm nervous, I don't know what to do. And you can contact that soul who is going to come back as a child and find out what purpose the child chose for this lifetime, what the child's lessons are, because most of us, if we're wise, we choose a purpose and lessons to focus on when we come back into a physical body. And what would be very helpful is if we had parents who knew about that and who knew our mission, our desire for this life, and the things that we wanted to sort of work on in our being, and could support that as parents. And then they can relax because they've met this person. They're not parenting a complete stranger, because the little bundles of joy pop out of the womb without an instruction manual. And you know, look, there's no user guide to this child.
We're racing ahead here. I wanted to talk about that aspect of it in a little while, but I've got to get the mechanics right of this circle. When you have a group of people, I don't know, how many do you have? Six, four, how many?
No more than eight.
No
that
more than
includes,
eight.
It includes both the conductor and the inquirer and maybe an inquirer's friend. So eight is the maximum. Actually, five or six are really optimum, because you don't want people sitting back and thinking, oh, someone else will say this. You want people diving in there and getting the information.
So the one last thing you need is an embarrassed silence.
Well, it's in the see what primes the pump of information, and energy is really a flow of information, all right? As we know, zeros and ones, information. Well, this kind of energy also contains information, thoughts, feelings, beliefs, memories. And if you sit in silence, you don't prime the pump. But if you start talking, and it may not be accurate, because the inquirer will say, you'll speak some, you know, I'm seeing a field of poppies. And the inquirer will say, yes, no, or I don't know. But you just keep going and keep going, and eventually some information will come that will make sense to the inquirer. And that's what people who participate have to understand. It will not make sense to you. And it doesn't have to make sense to you. It's not for you. It's for the inquirer. So speak up. You never know. Sometimes the inquirer says no and then comes back and says, well, you know, I found out from my cousin Fred that this was actually accurate. The inquirer doesn't know everything.
I got an email recently from somebody who went to a seance, very, very traditional sounding seance. The room was darkened, the medium was attended by an assistant, and it all sounded potentially, possibly a little suspect. And it sounded very, very, it sounded like it was straight out of the 1930s in the UK, where this kind of thing happened all the time. I'm presuming there's a lot of difference between what you're talking to me about and that.
Absolutely. For starters, we don't do it in darkened rooms, all right? We generally do it at about 3, 2 in the afternoon. And it's usually in our living room, and the only thing we set up is a circle of chairs, and everything is open. There are no hidden things, no apparatus. The only thing you need to contact the other side is to get into that flow of love and information, and to trust your intuition. That's all you need. Those are the tools.
So you got to go in there thinking this is going to happen. And if you all go in there thinking this is going to happen, and it's going to happen for the best of possible intentions, then it does.
That helps. All right. There are some times when we did one of these circles in which the inquirer insisted that the soul think back to a certain day and a certain feeling, and it obviously meant it was a different emotional experience for the inquirer as it was for the soul in question. And I could feel the soul's frustration, kept telling the inquirer, you know, I don't get it. You know, I'm sorry, it just didn't mean the same to me as it did to you. So, you know, the inquirer kept telling us, yes, 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 you were getting all this valid information, but because the soul didn't have the same emotional remembrance and recollections and significance about that one certain day, the inquirer left very unsatisfied. But it's not that we didn't get information, it's not that the soul didn't come, and it's not that the soul didn't try to help. It's just that for all of us, it was a, you know, the soul didn't have the same memory, and it was very frustrating for the inquirer, and it was frustrating for us because we really wanted to help. But that person obviously had a certain thing that she wanted replicated, and it didn't happen. You know, so again,
you've got to take what you get.
Yeah. Well, you know, and often what you get, even though you don't expect it, is exactly what you need. Mm-hmm. All right, and it's for the best, which is why we tell people, try not to have any expectations. Just go in with an open mind and a loving heart. And that is the best preparation for one of these healing circles.
For my skeptical listeners out there, I think they'll want to hear examples. Are you able, without obviously naming any specific names, are you able to give me examples of where this has been right on the money?
Well, in the book, there's several examples where it was right on the money. One was a woman who had grieved and suffered for 20 years because she didn't feel she got to say goodbye to her real mother when the mother died of cancer in 1967. So in 1987, we held an afterlife healing circle for this woman. And I talked to her 3 years later, and she was at peace, finally. It really helped her. And in another instance, this is one circle that I didn't attend, but Jana did. She led it. And the woman, it was an older woman, and she kept finding blood on her sheets. And there was no physical reason that she would bleed on her sheets. She was past, you know, the age of menstruation.
Right.
So finally she had the blood tested, and it was a very rare blood type. And it didn't mean anything to her until she finally found out from one of her family members that her grandmother had that blood type. That was her granny's blood type. So she found out that Jana could do this sort of thing, and they had the afterlife healing circle, and sure enough, Granny came in bursting with all sorts of things that she wanted to tell her granddaughter. And after that, the granddaughter had no more blood on her sheets.
Why do you think, as a symbol, as a method of contacting, as a kind of flag or signal, why do you think that the grandmother used blood? Of all the things that she could have used, she could have used a flower or a feather or a coin or whatever. Why blood?
Well, there's no one answer to that. First off, it's dramatic and it got her attention, all right? And it led her to find out that this was her grandmother's blood, because it was such a rare blood type, which popped her in mind. Because I know that people might not believe this, but when loved ones, it isn't just us who have things to say after our physical body dies. Sometimes, and many times, souls on the other side also said, oh, I really want to say this, I didn't get a chance to, but they have a hard time getting our attention. Very hard time, because they don't have physical sense. They can't call us up on the phone, although there are some instances in the book where the dead were ringing. They were literally ringing the phone.
I've heard and read about that, and I've always been very skeptical about these accounts. They are fascinating. But you know that that actually happens, that the dead can phone you.
Well, if they can, you see, you have to learn how to use your emotions to interact with physical objects. And it's not a skill that's readily apparent to a lot of souls, but some souls master it because they need to. They're desperate. So they try to get your attention first by just dropping into your thoughts. And you wave it away, you know, that's just my imagination. Well, you know what? Your imagination is very real. So when they can't do that, they will try to interact with something physical, to send people a sign because they're trying to get your attention. And in the book, we talk about one woman whose father died, and they were driving home. She and her husband were driving home from the funeral, and she was, you know, she was like, I need a sign on Daddy. And then she said, no, wait, send the sign to my husband, Jack. So at the next stoplight, she said, Jack, why don't you look up and tell me what you see, just very casually. And the man looked up and he said, wow, looking at the clouds. He said, I see a great big boat in the clouds. And the woman was like, boating was Daddy's thing. And she knew that, and she knew that her father was okay.
And he, in the car, had no clue that this particular drama was being played out. He didn't realize he was a pawn in this.
Well, he wasn't really a pawn, but he was a way, a means for her to take her own needs out of it and find out if anybody else could perceive the same a message from her dad, even without knowing it.
If the signs can be so profound as blood or a boat in the sky, why is the communication so hit and miss? Why doesn't it happen all the time? Why doesn't it happen routinely?
Well, it does happen routinely, but we don't recognize it for what it is, and we don't trust what we're getting. It's haphazard because we're trying to sort of muffle our intuition, you know. It's like putting blinders on your eyes and mufflers over your ears and then trying to see and hear in the physical world. Well, we do the same thing with skepticism, denial, conditioning and programming. We blind ourselves to the emotional and spiritual communication tools that we have. And because of that, communication is hit and miss, happenstance, incomplete, and what the afterlife healing circle is designed to do is to make the communication more complete and more directed.
Here's a strange question, and it's a story that I've never told anyone before now, but let's see if I can tell it. I tend to buy little bits of recording gear, secondhand and stuff, so I can do the work that I do and experiment in sound. I love it. A few years ago, probably about 7 years ago, I bought a little thing called a preamplifier. It's what you plug a microphone into, and it can, if you've got a good one, it'll make you sound good. And this thing was called a Jomeek VC3Q. Now, people who understand what sound is will know about these things. They are used by musicians and people who do broadcasting and that kind of stuff. And I bid for this thing on eBay and won it and had to travel 40 miles or so to go and pick it up. I had a feeling about the experience that I would have when I went to this place. And I walked in the door and I thought, something's happened here. I know it. I feel it. And all around the room were signs that there'd been somebody there who wasn't there anymore. There were pictures of a man winning a fishing competition and a music band. Anyway, as we do the transaction, she explains, I've been selling off my husband's music recording gear. It turns out he had cancer. And this was the final item that she was selling off. And there were some other items which she showed me. She was going to give them to me. And I said, look, don't give them to me, because these things, you can sell them separately. You know, this particular thing here will make you more money than you would think. So please don't give them away to me. And I felt, for a reason, I'm telling you this story for a reason. I always felt that I was put there for a reason. I remember saying to her when she told me the story, and she was doing very well. She wasn't crying or anything. And I felt enormously for her in that situation, because there she was selling off his recording gear. And I just felt myself say to her, and people are going to accuse me of being crazy, whatever, he's always with you. It's not something that I do. And I don't know where those words came from. And this is an absolutely true story, and it seemed to help. I don't know what that story's all about, but it will stay with me forever.
They came from him. They absolutely. He was leaning over your shoulder, something hard. All right, he was in that room. That was his equipment. He was very, very, it was, the impression I have is that it was, he felt like it was an extension of him and his personality and his mission to make music. Mm. All right?
And there was a ton of unfinished business there. I mean, a lot of this gear was very new. You know, I bought this particular thing at a very good price, and I felt very sorry about it, because he obviously hadn't used it very much, hadn't had time to before he'd been diagnosed with some kind of cancer. But I always felt that I had a role to play. And why would somebody who does the research and the work that I do be sent into a situation like that? Now, maybe it's all complete coincidence, but I always felt that it was a bit more than that.
Yeah, well, here's my take on coincidence. I'm very skeptical of coincidence. No, he was in that room, and he was trying to get through to her in any way that he could, and the fact that you felt for her opened you up to receiving a message from him and passing it on. All right? This is not manipulation. This is being open to receiving love and caring. All right? There's a big difference, because nothing untoward happened to you except that you have an experience that you feel is very profound, and it was, and that stays with you, because it just simply opened you up to receiving a message that was helpful to a woman who needed to hear it. And I don't call that manipulation. I call that being of service and being loving and caring.
Well, I felt then, and I will always feel, that I was part of something that I don't entirely understand. And the other occasion was, you know, I had quite a few experiences around the time of the death of my two parents. And the last one to go was my dad. And this is only 2 years ago now. And I had the, you know, I have enough things to deal with in my life to, you know, I was coping with the clearance of my father's house in a rush. And that is the most, if you've had to do it, you'll understand what I'm talking about here. It is the most difficult and heart-rending thing that you will probably ever have to do, other than cope with something that, you know, directly affects your own personal health. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And I got to the end of this, and I'd had to clear loads of stuff. They kept everything that I sent them, every letter that I sent them from radio stations and all kinds of things. You know, my mother kept an encyclopedia of my life there. And so I was clearing all of this, getting rid of miles of recording tape and all sorts of stuff that were part of me as a 20-whatever-year-old, and I was actually living there. And I realized that this was the last day, and I would close the front door, and I would never see that place again. It was just over a year ago. And I've told the story before on here, but I think it's worth running past you. Something told me to go to a drawer just as I was about to leave. So I went back, went to the drawer, and in that drawer was a cassette copy of a professional quality reel-to-reel recording of my two parents in life together in the 1980s, a recording that I'd made and forgotten about and wouldn't have known about had something told me not to go to a drawer that I had no intention whatsoever of ever looking at again. I'd have left that house without looking in the drawer. Something impelled me to go there. And that is a story I believe, and people can tell me that's just rubbish, mind over matter. I'll always believe that I was compelled and impelled to go back to that drawer and get that tape, because otherwise there would have been no proper broadcast studio quality recording of them. Would never have had that. Wouldn't have had their voices in that way. So I found that remarkable. So there was some kind of contact, I think, going on there.
Absolutely. I get this image of your dad kind of taking you by the ear and turning you around and shoving you toward that drawer.
But I've got to stop telling stories about myself, because some of my listeners don't like me talking about me and things that have happened to me. But it's the only way that I can illustrate the fact that, you know, I believe there is something in all of this. I don't know what it is, but I do believe there's something.
I love the story. I think it's beautiful. And again, it shows to me that even when we don't recognize it, or we can't understand it, and you have to understand and let go of the need to understand it at an intellectual level, because the intellect doesn't understand love to begin with. It never will. And that's perfectly okay with me, because love is something different.
Okay, well, here's the scientific question then. In that kitchen in Formby near Liverpool a year ago, what was there? I mean, they clearly weren't there. My mother had died 7 years, 8 years before that, and my dad had died quite a few months before that. The house felt very cold and bereft of anything or anyone. I didn't believe there was anything of them there. So what had I tapped into?
you had tapped into that which survives the physical body, the non-physical parts of self, the mental, emotional, and spiritual energy. Some call it the soul, some call it the spirit, some call it consciousness. You know, pick your favorite label. I don't particularly have a favorite. I tend to call it soul because that's real simple. Mm. And you have to understand that the energy of the soul and the heart is a different kind of energy than science defines for the material world. The material definition of energy is the ability to do work, steam driving a piston that drives a locomotive, that kind of thing. That is a material definition of energy. To understand spirit, to understand the soul, to get a grasp on it somehow, we recognize that we need a non-material definition of energy, and that definition is simple. It is the ability to love. Period. The greater the energy, the greater the ability to love.
So over the years, when people have said to me, you know, I've sometimes regarded it as being really glib, but they've said, love is all there is, and love transcends all. That really is a force. It really is an energy.
Love, well, you know, you're familiar with E equals MC squared. Everybody is. Mm-hmm. It's Einstein. Equivalence equation, and it's probably the most momentous piece of work he ever did. He was more interested in his general and special theories of relativity, but E equals MC squared basically explains what happens when we die, all right? And in my book, there's another equation, which I call the manifestation equation or creation equation, which explains what happens when we're born, and it's just sort of reworking those variables. But you have to redefine those variables, because it isn't just matter and energy that are fundamental equivalents. Matter, energy, love, and consciousness are all fundamental equivalents, meaning they're the same. They just vibrate at different frequencies when they're consciousness, when they're matter, when they're love, and when they're energy.
And how did you work that out?
I didn't work it out. Math is my worst subject. I'm the daughter of a mathematician, and math is my worst subject. All right? I didn't get it, but the souls that I speak to, the healers I work with, one day it was a hilarious story. I was in a Toastmasters meeting, and I was listening to a speech that I was supposed to be able to grade and comment on after the speech. And a soul who calls himself Dr. Sunon came up and was all excited and tapped me on the shoulder and said, I've got an answer for you. You've got to listen to this. And I'm like, go away, spook. So he was like, no.
Can I just stop you for a second? Tapped you on the shoulder?
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel that?
He leaned over me and tapped me on the shoulder.
And
you felt it?
Oh, okay.
Sitting in the meeting.
Sorry for interrupting.
Okay, and I was like, look, I'm busy, you know, go away. He's like, no, you want to hear this. This is really important. So for the next part of the speech, he was talking to me about what energy really is. Because I'd been working, noodling around with that, and I'd gotten the information that, yes, there is something more. This is only a partial reading of that equation. The variables mean more than what they science gives them. And he finally had an answer for me. And the being who gave him the answer has never been in human form, but he's a very loving soul. And, you know, energy is the ability to love. And that was the non-physical definition of energy that I had been waiting for.
Let me tie up another loose end here before we talk about the unborn, which is fascinating in itself. The group of people, the circle, when you're all together and you have the person who is the facilitator, the contactor there, and the group of other people, do you have to chant things? Do you have to link hands? Do you have to go, what do you do?
No, you don't. You can if you feel you need to. But what you do is you do link hands, all right, and you get in a comfortable position because you might be there for 45 minutes or an hour. And then how we do the circle is that the conductor just simply offers an invocation, asks for the love, and then we all ask, our guides to function as protectors because we only want the soul in question. We don't want any mind players. We don't want any monkey business. We just want the soul or souls we want to call.
So you can block out bad energy.
Absolutely.
And you can block out sprites and nasty spirits.
Yes, and you should. okay? You don't want to go into that park at 3 a.m. or open your door and just yell, come on down.
And has anything ever gone wrong? Has something that you didn't want in there ever come in?
The only kind of phenomenon that we had one time was that we use these swivel chairs because they're comfortable and you can kind of work them into a position that everybody's comfortable with. Well, everybody's swivel chair, they were all on the same level floor, but one woman's chair kept swinging back and forth. She'd raise her legs and it would turn back and forth. And nobody else's chair was moving. We tried it and we said, that's kind of silly. So once we got going and asked for protection, that all nonsense all stopped. No, we don't want nonsense. I have no patience for games, okay? Head games, whether they're with people in physical bodies or souls not in physical bodies. I don't care about that.
Do you have any fear?
Do I have any fear?
Yeah, fear of what might go wrong.
No, not because I know how to do it when it does not go wrong. Mm. All right? I have fears. Everybody has fears, but not of a properly conducted afterlife healing circle. There's nothing to fear in that.
So when you've been together in this way, when you've got to that stage and it's going well, how do people feel anything that proves to them that they are, you know, they're receptive? The channels are open.
They can feel physical sensations, they can feel emotions, they can get visions, they can get understandings, they can hear words in their head. It's all coming through that intuitive stuff. And yes, the participants get just as much out of that session as the inquirer and the conductor. It's a healing for everybody. It's a joyous celebration. It is the most profound act of worship that I have ever experienced.
And how do you get whatever comes through, whoever comes through, to identify themselves definitively, positively?
Well, that's that evidential material I was talking about. They will tell the group things that only that soul and the inquirer would possibly know. And an example from the book is there was a group Jana was taking part in, and she kept sensing, feeling. She's very high in intuitive feeling, and she kept feeling the guy next to her was getting something, but he wasn't voicing anything. So she said, speak up. So he said, well, you know, this doesn't make any sense, but I keep seeing a white picket fence, but it's not upright. It's on its side. And the inquirer gasped and said, oh, now I know it's my son. And after the circle was over, she explained that as a boy, her son had taken a piece of old picket fence, nailed it on its side to a tree as steps so that his dog could get up in his treehouse with him. No one could have known that. Absolutely no one could have known that, but the mother and the soul, the son.
And you're quite sure that none of this could have come out of any facet of mind of people who were there? It had to come from something external.
Well, it had to come from someone who knew about it. They couldn't have dreamed it up on their own. How would they know?
How would they possibly know?
That's such a strange thing. Its strangeness was what kept the guy from speaking out. Because normally if you saw a picket fence, it would be upright. Well, this was on its side. Well, it was on its side because it was nailed to a tree to make steps that a dog could use.
Well, you can't make that up, I don't think. How has this changed your attitude to dying yourself?
It has allowed me to understand and to grasp emotionally even more than just in my head. It's not a head thing anymore. It's a heart thing. I know that I will continue. It has also made what I do in this lifetime, it's just increased the blessing because I know what a blessing it is to have a physical body. And this made me appreciate it. Absolutely.
So those who say we're just hanging around here for a while, then we die, then we get the good stuff, that's wrong. It's good to be here.
Well, it can be good or it can be bad, all right? What we do that infuriates a lot of people is we tell them, look, you chose to be here. You know, do something with it, all right? Because, you know, people, I didn't choose to be born, I'm a victim, blah, 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 all right? We're like, sorry, that's not our thing. If you want to wallow in that, feel free. But we believe that you choose to be in a body, and you have a purpose and some lessons, and you can either get on with it, or you can just wallow around. You always have a choice.
And what about those who don't wallow around? They choose to exit themselves from this plane. They choose to take their own lives. What happens to them?
Well, what I tell people who are contemplating suicide is that there is no condemnation by God for people who take their own physical bodies. But if you think it will stop the pain, that's where you're mistaken.
Do you have to come back and experience it all again?
Well, but the pain isn't in your physical body. You may, of course, have a physical ailment, but the real pain, the real issue is in your emotional and spiritual consciousness.
And you take that with you. All right. Okay, so there's no escape. You have to resolve it, not escape it.
Well, yeah. Believe me, souls go lifetime after lifetime after lifetime not resolving things because they have a lot of fear about it. But eventually, something will come along. You will draw an experience to you that will compel you. And what we say to people is, you know, you can learn the hard way, you can learn the easy way. Which way would you like to learn?
Oh, boy. Well, yes, I think a lot of us, including myself, have... for reasons that we'd never really understood, taken the hard road. Okay, we've got a little time to talk about this fascinating thing that you say that you can do, and that is to talk to the to communicate with the unborn. Now, for some people listening to this, that's going to stretch credulity.
I wouldn't argue with them because they haven't done it. Why would they believe it? All right, I would not necessarily have believed it until I started becoming involved in all this stuff and understood and recognized that the soul is a continuum. The energy of consciousness exists before there is a physical body, and it will exist after the physical body is dead. So, again, souls come into the physical realm, and they choose parents, they choose a lesson, they choose a purpose. And if you are a parent, one of the things you can do to make things easy on yourself is to say, I'd like a child who can feel my love. Most parents don't recognize that they can do that. Yeah, they can. And another thing that they can do as parents to make things a little easier is to find out what they can about that little soul before it's born so that they can start to relax and start to recognize that they are just stewards of that soul's physical childhood, and that soul energy is as old and as wise as they are. And it might even be a role reversal. In other lives, they might have been the children themselves. All right, souls tend to come back together to support each other, and because they know and love each other. So there's a real, if you can get that information, it can help you relax and be more confident and comfortable, because it's unique information. You won't find it in any parenting blog or any parenting manual, because those talk about kids in general, and this information is specific to this particular child.
So this is the cosmic equivalent of an ultrasound scan, in a way.
Yeah, in a way it is, but it does things that an ultrasound can't do. The ultrasound can tell you the physical condition of the child. This can tell you the mental, emotional, and spiritual condition of the child.
And what kind of people come to you wanting to do that? Presumably it's a couple. It's a, you know, maybe a husband and a pregnant wife. Is that so? And what kind of people?
Well, it's a husband and a pregnant wife, or it's a woman with a troubled pregnancy who needs some emotional and spiritual resolution.
Why would somebody who had a troubled pregnancy want to come to you? I need to understand that. Why would they want that?
Because you know, even if a woman chooses to have an abortion, that takes care of the physical stuff, but the emotional stuff remains.
Okay.
And I believe that women have the right to determine whether or not they're going to continue with a pregnancy. All right? And I believe that what abortion means is not death, but simply delay. That soul will either wait until the woman is ready to be a mother, which happened and is described in the book, or the soul will find different parents.
Right. So a woman who has an abortion, and I don't really want to be getting into the rights and wrongs of that here, because you know what a can of worms you're going to be opening up, so let's not go there. But a woman who does that for whatever reason, perhaps a clinical reason, whatever, mm-hmm. that soul will still choose to come back somewhere else, will return.
will return, either with that woman later or with another set of parents. All right? It's just simply delay.
You sound very certain about that.
Oh, I am.
And how can you be?
Through the experiences that I've had with the Afterlife Healing Circle. Again, it's based on my experience, which is why I don't demand that other people believe it. What I suggest to people is that have the experience and then make your own decision. I'm not trying to dictate your reality, and I'm not trying to tell you, you know, what I object to is people telling me what happened in my experience when they've never gone through it.
You said something at the beginning, though, and I've never been a father. It's just one of those things that hasn't happened in my life. I didn't plan it that way. It's just that's how life panned out. But you're saying that had I become a father, that I could, with my partner, have endeavored to find out what the life plan for the child that was to come would be.
Exactly. The purpose, the lessons.
And how'd you go about doing that?
You ask. You get the child, the soul, to come into the circle, which is not hard because the soul energy surrounds the fetus, all right, and keeps it alive. If that soul energy is removed, the fetus will die, all right? It won't grow. So you talk to the soul, and again, the circle helps this process. You can actually do it individually if you know how, but the circle is usually a good way to get emotional support. What I love about the Afterlife Healing Circle is that during the moment of the moments of communication, it's very emotional, and the people who participate provide support and help right when the person, the soul, and the person communicating need it most. And you provide support not just to the person in physical body, but to the soul not in a physical body.
And are there any safety valves on that? I can imagine a situation where, you know, you might get, this may sound like an absurd example, maybe it is, but you might get a situation where you've got Hitler coming back. You wouldn't want to know that your child was Hitler.
We haven't encountered something like that, and I doubt that will happen, but I can't say for certain. And I also know that the Afterlife Healing Circle is really meant simply for resolution and of either saying goodbye or hello. It's not meant to, it's not therapy. It's not meant to explore sort of hairier, more involved issues that Jan and I do individually with clients in private.
So could you get a situation where, for example, the child yet to be born said, in a previous existence, I was a musician in Vienna, and I never quite made it to the level that I wanted to, and there were several symphonies that I just didn't get out there. It never happened for me. So I'm coming back to finish that off. Is that the kind of thing that you get, and then the parents presumably go away and try to make sure that that child would have a great musical education?
Well, it's generally not so specific as I'm going to write symphonies. Really, purpose is more I'm going to express joy, or I'm going to be of service, or I'm going to be a teacher, or I'm going to be a healer, you know, do healing. And lessons are, I want to learn to love myself. I want to learn to let go of guilt. I want to learn to be kinder, that kind of thing. And then the parents can support that. And the soul has freedom to choose any venue to express love or any venue to be kinder. All right? Purpose and lessons are kind of specific to the soul. They can get kind of detailed, but purpose is usually very general.
And you trust to the cosmic way of things that what you're going to get coming through your door is not the potential reincarnation of a major league criminal, for example, that there will be a sorting process that will make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, I've never had that happen, and I can't say it won't happen, but it doesn't, it's not, you know, those souls eventually will come back, all right? They eventually will. But that's part of the way that we grow and learn and become, you know, because I do believe that souls can choose to change. But again, it's not some magical process that's bestowed on them. It's their experiences will give them the emphasis to change.
And again, you don't have to name any names, Candace, but in a real-life situation where you've had a couple trying to communicate with the unborn child, can you think of an example and maybe a reason why they've gone away feeling that they've been really helped?
Well, in the book, I have a couple who the woman was 40 years old when she found out she was pregnant. She thought she'd had a miscarriage, but her abdomen kept getting bigger. So a sonogram revealed that she had twins. And the miscarriage we found out was that there was a triplet. There was a third child who decided to leave. So, and the husband and wife, you know, the husband, Rondi was his second wife. And his first wife died of the complications of childbirth. So he was freaking out left, right, and center. And Rondi was a bit concerned because, you know, at 40, that's you're not exactly young, and this was her first pregnancy. So we did a healing circle, the two of them and Jana and me, and it was just wonderful, all right? And the twins came in. They were beautiful souls. And, you know, they're in their early 20s now, and they're pretty much exactly the way that they showed themselves in the circle. And their parents relaxed. They allowed and they asked the souls to be very present in the children during the birth. That would help the mother and make it less painful. And everything went smoothly. But until they had that experience, they couldn't be reassured emotionally that Rondi was going to be all right and that the kids would be all right. I mean, no amount of just saying, oh, everything will be fine, we have all this modern equipment, blah, blah, blah. That wasn't cutting the mustard. They needed to feel it, and that's the circle helped them feel it.
So you save these people, and the same goes, I presume, for the people who want to contact dead loved ones. You save them a lot of anguish, you think?
I hope so. That's the idea. The idea is to bring people to a point of peace where they may be sad, they may miss the soul who's gone. We all do. But there's not this clawing anguish. I never got to say goodbye. I never got to say this. I'm not sure how they're doing. Are they lost in me their effort? Those questions go away. And they can find some peace.
And you told me at the very beginning of this, and at the end of this, we bring it right the way back in a full circle to the beginning, that you had to confront some issues, as we all do, in your life, and this had helped you. This work that you've done over these decades, how's it made you different? How's it fixed the problems that you came into it all with?
It's made me different because I'm living more out of all of myself. I was very mental focused, say, back in 1985, and I couldn't relate to people, and they were a big mystery to me. Because I was a big mystery to myself. But I reconnected my heart and soul with my mental body and physical body, and it allowed me to relate emotionally and to understand and feel the role of emotions and the role of the spirit in living a complete and healed life. You can't do it just out of your mental body and your physical body. That's only half of self.
And who did you go to see to learn this?
I went to, Jana was my healer.
Okay,
on that.
It was all Jana.
Mm-hmm. And she's trained other people to do this, what we call Sunan therapy. And it's really just an energy healing method that allows people to tap into their emotions and very simply resolve stuff by simply letting go of self-judgments. That's the key. When you let go of self-judgment, you heal.
We've been talking about this current book, and I don't normally get people on specifically to talk about their books. The conversation about the book is usually, you know, peripheral to what we discuss. But in this case, I wanted to make an exception. What are you working on now? What's the new project? Is there one?
Well, I'm sort of in a stopping place, but I've got several books in mind, and I also have a fiction series that I've got to start book 7 on. And it actually, in book 5, which is not yet published, it does portray an afterlife healing circle talking to an unborn soul.
You sound very at peace in yourself.
Getting there. Always a work in progress. I love that. I love that expression was, be patient with me, God isn't finished with me yet. Well, that certainly applies to me. Mm. So
I go into work in the mornings, and sometimes they'll say to me, morning, Howard, how are you? And I'll say, I'm exceedingly. Because at that time in the morning, which is usually very early, I'm not going to commit myself to anything.
Yeah, well, some people are more naturally night people, and some people are more naturally morning people, and that certainly has to do with which soul senses you're strong with.
Really?
And it does affect personality.
That's strange. I've always been a morning person. They've always put me on early morning radio. That's what I've done mostly in my life. But that's another story for a whole other time. If people want to know more about you, I know that you've got a website. What is it?
It is www.thehealingcirclebook.com.
And how do you like to be known? Do you like to be known as Candace L. Talmage or C.L. Talmage, which is what appears on your book jackets, isn't it?
Yeah, Candace L. Talmage is for my nonfiction. I write my fiction under the byline C.L. Talmage. I don't regard it as fiction. I regard it as memoirs of my past lives, but other people will call it fiction, so that's okay.
Okay, well, look, I'm bound to get response to this show, and I'll pass on if you want me to what response I get. But I've found this hour very, very interesting and quite calming, relaxing in many ways. You're very good to talk with. Candace, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Howard, and I love your stories, so keep telling them.
I will. Thank you so much.
All right.
Candace L. Talmage, and the book is called The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anybody Can Contact the Other Side. I'll put a link to them and their work on my website, theunexplained.tv. More good guests coming soon here at The Unexplained. Please keep the faith. Please keep the emails coming to theunexplained.tv. That's the website. You can follow a link to send me messages, and I see them all. Not like big media. I don't ignore them. I always do something about them, and that's the difference I would hope and like to think between me and them. You can also make a donation on the website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the PayPal link, and it's as easy as two or three steps, and you've done it. And I'm very, very grateful if you have recently. If you haven't, please consider it. Thank you very much for the support, your good wishes, your good thoughts. Thank you to Adam, my webmaster at Creative Hotspot. But above all, thank you to you for what you've meant to me over these years. My name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. I'm in London. And until next we meet, please stay safe, stay calm, and stay in touch. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.